This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. We're Talk Louisiana. We switch gears and are joined by Larry Tai. He's a fabulous historian. Larry is a best-selling author of Bobby Kennedy and Satchel, as well as Superman, The Father of Spin, Homelands, and Rising from the Rails. And his latest biographical target is Joseph Raymond McCarthy, the U.S. Senator who gave us McCarthyism. Joe McCarthy died in 1957. He was only 48 years old. He lived a rough and tumble life and disgraced himself. Some believe disgraced his country in his stint in the United States Senate. But the book is proclaimed as the definitive biography of the most dangerous demagogue in American history. Now, we've had some demagogues, and of course some people are appreciative of demagogues at times, and the two people mentioned are Huey Long and Donald Trump. How does Joe McCarthy compare with them, Larry Tai?
So he was the direct descendant of Huey Long. Huey Long is a tough act to follow and a tough act to top, and Joe McCarthy followed him and topped him in the sense of lasting longer and amassing even more power than the incredibly powerful senator and governor from Louisiana, Huey Long. And Joe McCarthy became the archetype for all the demagogues who came after, including, many would say, Donald Trump, who seems to be following McCarthy's playbook almost to the letter.
McCarthy was from Wisconsin, a state that is conflicted politically, but now is largely considered a liberal state, although it's had a number of Republican governors, and it did go, as we know, in a close race for Donald Trump in 2016. How did he amass support in his state to become a major figure before he became big time in the mid-1950s, 1954 to be precise, with his hearings on alleged communist infiltration in the government?
So he amassed power in Wisconsin first by trying to do it as a pro-New Deal, pro-FDR Democrat. And when that didn't work, and when he lost his first race for office, which was for district attorney, he was willing to do whatever it took to be elected. And what that eventually meant when he ran for Senate was to run not just as a Republican, but to run from the right end of the Republican Party. They call them Wisconsin stalwart Republicans, to beat an iconic figure named Robert La Follette. And the La Follettes were to Wisconsin politics what the Kennedys are in Massachusetts and what the Longs were in Louisiana. They were people who looked like they couldn't be beat. So Joe McCarthy ran a campaign that was half highbrow and half kick 'em where it hurts campaign that became the model for just about everything he did. And he swept into the U.S. Senate in 1946 as arguably the least prepared guy to take office that year when the Senate convened.
He claimed to have a list of 57 State Department employees who were known communist moles. Where did that number come from?
So there are lots of speculation where it came from. It could have come from old lists of other people who had been hunting for communists for years, the old House Un-American Activities Committee and other people in Washington. And it could have come from other baked-over names. One person suggested that McCarthy loved hamburgers and loved steaks, and before he gave that famous speech in Wheeling, West Virginia, that he stopped by, had a big piece of beef of some sort, poured Heinz 57 sauce on it, and was so captivated by that number that he translated that into the number of communists in the State Department.
57. Joseph Raymond McCarthy, the book is Demagogue, The Life and Long Shadow of Senator Joe McCarthy. It is the definitive work on McCarthy, and there have been millions of words written about this man, but he has a legacy that is immense. And when he had these hearings in 1954, the Republicans had gained control of the U.S. Senate. He was chair of a committee, so that gave him entree to doing this. And he had these young men with him who were compliant, Roy Cohn most notably, David Shine, and early on, Bobby Kennedy.
So shockingly, Bobby Kennedy. And one of the things that first intrigued me about McCarthy was his connection to Bobby Kennedy. We have a guy who is one of the most notorious Cold Warrior conservatives in American history, teaming up with the iconic liberal family. But Bobby Kennedy had just graduated from law school. He was firmly in the middle of his class. He was looking for a job, and Papa Joe Kennedy had given enough money to Joe McCarthy that all he had to do was pick up the phone and say, "Hire my son," and Joe McCarthy did that. Bobby Kennedy went to work for him. He stayed for nearly 6 months. They became friends in a friendship that lasted to the end of McCarthy's life. And when I was researching my biography on Bobby Kennedy, the thing that stuck with me forever was when I interviewed Bobby's widow, Ethel, who at one point was the most popular woman in America. She said, "Joe McCarthy might be a monster to much of America, but to us he was just plain good fun." And the notion of Joe McCarthy as good fun was intriguing enough to me that I wanted to see that other side of him and try to explore things beyond the caricature of Joe McCarthy as Red Hunter that we learn in our grammar schools.
Well, he was an Irish Catholic. He was a boxer. He served in World War II, although he did trump up his record, and that's gone. It's in heavy detail here, but he also was vicious on gay people, going after homosexuals, using it as a weapon against them. And as is often the case, it is thought that he was a homosexual or bisexual himself.
So yes, he went after the only scare that became more associated with Joe McCarthy's name than the Red Scare was the so-called Lavender Scare. And again, McCarthy was looking for a convenient scapegoat, and the idea that Joe McCarthy, who had at his side the clearly gay young staffer Roy Cohn, and whether or not McCarthy himself was gay, there was a whole whisper campaign as this young bachelor senator came to Washington that he might be gay himself. And the idea that he was going after this easy scapegoat and this potential fig leaf to keep the attention away from the question of whether or not he and his young aide were gay was, to me, one more sign of just how opportunistic and how hypocritical Joe McCarthy was.
Was there any evidence of a relationship between Cohn and McCarthy?
Not between Cohn and McCarthy. There were intense whispers of a campaign, of a relationship, a romantic relationship between Roy Cohn and a guy named G. David Shine, who was a young staffer that Roy Cohn told Joe McCarthy that he had to hire. And the two of them would go gallivanting at taxpayer expense across the world, doing investigations supposedly of communist influence everywhere, and they would get into all kinds of trouble, and they denied ever having had a romantic relationship, but just about every columnist in the country speculated on what was going on with them because they were not two people who were somebody that journalists would ever have liked.
And these were his two top aides in the hearings, Shine and Cohn. Cohn, of course, parlayed that into worldwide fame and then ultimate death at 59 years old of AIDS. The Long Life and Shadow of Senator Joe McCarthy, Demagogue is the book. We'll try to take a call or two. Please be brief. Clyde in Lafayette. Clyde, you're on with Larry Tai. Hi, Clyde.
How you doing this morning? Once again, love the show. And listen, I just want to know, is there a connection between Donald Trump and Roy Cohn? I've heard that somewhere.
All right. Yes, there was a connection between Trump and Cohn. But go ahead. You know that.
Sure. So Clyde, thank you for the question. And the answer is that Roy Cohn, as we've already discussed, was Donald Trump's protege, an arrogant and brilliant young lawyer who came from New York and learned everything he learned about how to play hardball politics at the feet of Joe McCarthy. Half a century later, when Donald Trump was starting his career in real estate in New York, he needed a tutor, and Roy Cohn was the guy that Donald Trump's father and Donald Trump turned to teach Donald Trump how to make things work in this hardball world of New York real estate. He was such an able tutor that every time as president Donald Trump has gotten into trouble, he has said, "I wish I had Roy Cohn at my side still." Trump learned the McCarthy playbook through this flesh and blood through line of Roy Cohn.
And Cohn learned from McCarthy and was loyal to McCarthy until Cohn took his last breath.
Absolutely true.
Skipper in Gonzales. Skipper, you're on with Larry Tai. Hi, Skipper.
I wanted to ask, was there a situation where there was some infiltration of communism into government and they exaggerated it?
All right. Was there some infiltration, or was this all just hocus pocus?
Definitely not all hocus pocus. There was definitely infiltration of Soviet spies into high levels of the U.S. government. But by the time Joe McCarthy came along, all the 24-carat spies had been rooted out. And the ones that were left, and there were some left, were ones that largely escaped Joe McCarthy's notice. It was as if he was walking around in the dark and picking names out of some file cabinet without any real look at whether they were true spies, or whether they were still in government. And in the end, the one thing anti-communists and pro-communists in America agreed on was that Joe McCarthy was their worst enemy.
The book is Demagogue, The Life and Long Shadow of Senator Joe McCarthy, from Larry Tighe. Congratulations, Larry, and it's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Fine job from this exceptional historian. John Kerry says Tighe's book nails the defining biography of McCarthy, saying he grew up as a Cold War kid watching it all on television. Tighe brings it to life. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Until tomorrow, for Matt Doyle, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.